Our next talk is with David May, who is the lead programmer at Big Ant. He's been in the working in games, obviously, for 12 years.
Yep.
Mainly as a programmer, and mainly on console games. And so in this session, we'll be having a casual conversation on the chairs. So tell me, can you still hear us?
Yep.
Just going to move this here. Come on over. Probably can't see us, but all right. So, David.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. We've spoken about a few things beforehand, so I have a few things that I want to prompt you with. First thing is tools. Any advice to do with tools?
Okay. So, first thing is just keep it simple. You know, you can just overcomplicate them so much, and the more complicated you make it, it's going to end up in disaster. You know, when I was back in Transmission Games, we had the one tool that does it all, and it was awful. I got put onto the team for 9 months, and on my first day, I had over 100 crash logs being sent to me, because it was just so overly complicated. I don't think it was designed with everything that it was doing from the outset. So it was an absolute disaster. So, you know, unless you're someone like Epic Games and you got hundreds of employees and millions to spend on it, just keep things as simple as possible. If you're going to go down that design route, just design everything from that perspective from the outset. And the last thing, and this is the most important, whatever you do, do not let programmers design the UI, because we're absolutely crap at it.
Okay, thank you. What about playtesting?
Playtesting, yeah. So one thing that we all tend to do is we tend to just work in this bubble. Well, so we only tend to look at what we're actually working on. So for the programmers, if you're working on a particular AI system, you tend to concentrate on what that AI system does, and you don't actually see the whole scope of the game. So one thing that Big Ant's where I'm working now, is that we're doing it every single week, that everybody is forced to play the game that they're working on. So the designer chooses a level or whatever, and everybody goes and plays that game. And then on a Friday, you get them into the room, have a meeting, and everybody gives their feedback of how that level went. You know, and that drives iteration, and it's just so invaluable, you know, to actually get everybody together, get everybody's opinions on different things every single week.
And you were saying that Big Ant's the first company that you've seen has done this, and
the other companies have tried, you know, that I've worked at, but they've never actually successfully done it on the weekly scale.
Yep.
And it's the lead designer has said it's the difference between making an average game compared to a good game. You know, just getting everybody together to play it.
Yep. Okay. And how about roles in terms of motivation, keeping people motivated?
Yeah. So I realize this is not possible, you know, all the time, but whatever you do, try and get people working on what they want to work on. I used to be an AI programmer, again back at Transmission Games, they put me on the tool I mentioned earlier, and I was on that for 9 months, and I've been doing this for 12 years, and I've been through some awful times, crunch periods and stuff like that, but the least motivated I've ever been in my career was that 9 months working on tools. It's just, I wanted to get the tool, I wanted to fix the tool and make it better, but I wanted to do anything else more. So you got to try and
give people the chance to work on what they really want
absolutely.
To work on.
Yeah.
Is that realistic though?
It's, with planning, it's not always going to work.
Yeah.
We've got people that aren't working on things that they want to work on right now, but we can plan for the future, for the next game.
And I guess it's a case of recognizing that if you can see that they're losing all passion and spirit
yeah.
that perhaps move them out.
Absolutely, yeah. And speak up is the, you know, for the actual person that's doing it, you got to speak up and yep. actually say, I'm really not enjoying this. Cause, yeah.
And that relates to the importance of keeping an eye on your team.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, big Ant. So, I won't go into the specific, but you know, it's so important to actually keep an eye on your team. You know, you've had people that you know, especially senior people as well, that I suppose are experts in their fields that have come back and reported to us that things are going well, it's all on schedule. You know, there's no problems with it. And, you know, just trusted them. And it was just the biggest mistake. It's just, you know, when it actually slipped and went behind, we checked out, we dissected what it'd done. And it was such a massive disaster. But we were so far down the production process, we didn't have time to actually, you know, rewrite everything that he'd done. And, you know, fix it. So we just like put a few band-aids on it
yeah.
And released the game as it was. And you know, when you read the reviews from all the press and the magazines and stuff, it was all coming back, and you could trace back like probably half of the bad things that people were saying down to this one system. And it's quite yep. embarrassing.
Okay, yeah. It's embarrassing. Okay, well, how can producers help in this?
Oh, yeah. So I've had quite a few producers, and the best example, I personally think a producer can add like 5 people to the team. You know, you get a really good producer, it's worth 5 people on your team. Because I think it was in 2003, I was working on this project, and we had this producer, and I actually thought he was pretty good. You know, he was making all the right noises, he was, you know, he seemed to be, you know, it was always visible in the studio, and you know, it was always there and just doing the right thing, it seemed. But he left halfway through the project, and we brought on another guy that we came on, and then suddenly things started happening, right? We actually started getting the things that we were being promised. And, you know, because all of these things that were coming together, the team morale just skyrocketed, and,
yep.
you know, it just...
How can you tell a good producer?
Well, that's the thing, I can't. Yeah.
Does anyone else have a tip on how to...
You can't tell until something's going... I mean, with a producer, you're right, they're the equivalent of 5 good people, but if you get a bad one, it's kind of like taking 5 people off, and you can't tell until they've actually had a chance to actually start doing something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You've got to give them time to prove that they are being effective or they're being ineffective.
Absolutely.
And this comes down to being prepared to sack people.
Ah, yeah. So I don't know what it is with the smaller studios is they just don't want to sack anyone. it's an unfortunate thing, right? You know, that it happens. People aren't meeting the expectations that you're giving them. I go out my way to help anyone that's not performing. You know, try and bring them up to the standard that they're expected to in their position, etc. But at the end of the day, if someone's not working out, you have to let them go. Mm. Small companies or the smaller independent companies just don't seem to ever want to do it, you know. And you know, when you think that all the large companies out there, they seem to like lay people off at a whim, you know, without even thinking twice about it. Whereas with the smaller independent studios, they could have $10 in the bank accounts and you know, begging on the streets, and they still won't let people go. Mm. It's a really unfortunate part of the job. Where, you know, it's the worst part of my job by far. But you know, it's something that we've really got to learn to do. And this is not just here. It's like all 6 companies that I've worked for, they just don't sack people. It's part of the job. You know, if someone's not performing, you just got to get rid of them.
Yep.
Because they bring the whole team down yep. to their level. That's the thing. Is like you've got one person that's not performing, and everybody else is good. They seem to just bring everybody down to that level, and it's just not good.
On companies creating their own tech.
Yeah. So again, it's the more independent developers. This, but we're a bunch of prima donnas. For some reason, we want to create all of our own tech, right? So we've got perfectly good middleware out there, right? But for some reason, the smaller developers want to do it all themselves. For example, the movie player in NRL, and this has happened at two last companies I've worked for. Management have told us that we have to write our own movie player. Right, so we wrote a movie player for NRL, got it in. It took, I can only suspect it's a lot of money, quite a considerable amount of time, and on the PS3, it just continually crashed. We could not work it. We sent it off to Sony, and they're trying to get them debugging. They couldn't work it out, and it just continually crashed. In the end, we actually redesigned the menus to get around the crash bug. Right, and then about 2 weeks ago, I was asked to put Bink into our new engine, the movie player middleware. Took me 2 hours to do it, and I've not had a second's problem since. And the thing is, I'm not paying the bills, obviously, but surely that makes a lot more financial sense to get something that's out of the box good than trying to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Just got to embrace middleware.
Okay. QA.
Yeah. It's another one of my things. From my point of view, there's two kinds of QA tester. You've got the guys that test games, and then you've got the guys that play games. Right? The testers, they take it apart, they try different things every time. You know, they've got this really good way of doing things. And then you've got the people that play games, and they're crap. They're useless to you because they do the same thing again and again and again. Right? And so they find things that are in that one route that they're taking.
One play style.
They've got this one play style, and you know, if it's slightly outside their play style, they don't find it.
No, but that's fine. We can leave it there. Okay. What about the experience of the team?
Yeah.
We've all had times where we've worked on projects where some people don't have that much experience. You know, how much of damage can that do?
It makes such a massive difference. So the first games company I worked for, the team I was on, there was 20 plus people, I think it was, something like that. And I'd say about 70% of the team had 1 year or less experience. The lead programmer and the team leader had 3 years experience, right? And so many bad decisions were made. And it's not because, you know, we wanted to do it the wrong way or whatever. It's just nobody knew, right? Nobody knew any better. So it seems that every single decision that we made, it was just an absolute disaster. And it turned out to be by far the worst game I've ever worked on. It was just absolute disaster. We've got people that I work with. Some of them say that you need like 50% of your team to have like 5 years or more experience. Obviously, depending on the team size, I don't know what I agree, but you know, you do need as many people
as possible with
that experience, because it can be a disaster.
And one thing I've found with experience is that I can find some people that are really good technically, like they have the skill, but they don't know how to work with teams.
Yeah.
They don't know how to work with other people, or they don't know how to take a brief. You know, there's lots of different layers to what experience is.
Exactly. And it just coming out like design when they're asked to do something, and you say, okay, go and design it for me, come back to me with what you've got.
Yep.
And they just don't know how to do it. So
okay, so how about a couple of programmer specific ones?
Okay.
Automated builds.
Yeah, okay, so one of the things that we put in now at Big Ant is when you actually commit something, it doesn't actually commit it to the main branch, it commits it to a side branch, and then we've got this build box that builds everything. That's nothing special, but it then tests it on all platforms, for checks the frame rate, checks for memory leaks and things like that. And if it fails on any of these things, it will revert the commit, and it will send an email back to the person that actually made this commit saying your commit has failed. You know, tells them exactly why it failed, and they've got to redo, you know, fix whatever the issue was. This isn't the solution to all of your memory leaks or frame rate or anything problems that you're going to have, but let's just say it took one person 5 days to actually put in. It, don't think it took that long, but we probably saved 10 times, 100 times that amount of time actually just from not having that constant broken build and memory leaks and low frame rates and stuff like that. You know, go back to like NOL at the end of that project, all I seem to do is be fixing memory leaks and trying to get the frame rate up and stuff like that. So one decision early on in the project of to actually spend this time to actually get it right. And then, you know, at the end of the project, instead of concentrating, you know, trying to fix all the memory leaks and everything else, we worked on the gameplay, which, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Anyone do the same thing?
A question, David, why is it, even though there is like across Gamma Sutra and across all these other websites, there are a million postmortems saying, well, we needed to have good tools, we needed to have experienced stuff, we tried to make our own engine and it didn't work, so we ended up going for a third party one. We've all been told, the whole industry's been told for the last 15 years, this attempt to try and save money completely failed. Why do people keep doing it? Why do people keep trying to save money by not using Bink or using 90% of their staff straight out of uni? Why do you think it is that we seem to be reluctant, and all of us are, seem to be reluctant to look at the advice of somebody else's fail, and as Floyd said, which is brilliant, fail and fail often, but if somebody else has already failed, learn by those failures. Why are we not learning by other people's failures?
I don't know. As I said, with the middleware thing, is I genuinely think we are a bunch of prima donnas. We want to think that we're the best and we can do anything that we put our sights to. It doesn't matter what money that's involved in it. It's the way of the industry, it seems. Getting the staff thing, again, it comes down to dollars, I'm sure. You know, we all want to actually get the university graduates and stuff like that actually into games. You know, we've had, you know, interns and stuff like that, but you've really got to have that balance because, you know, if you're taking, you've got an intern or whatever, or a junior programmer coming in, they're taking time away from the team, so all in all, it evens out where it's worse off. So, you know, really got to get that balance right.
Yeah, I think it's a fixed cost versus a running cost. Like if someone comes up to you and says, "Give me $10,000," you're gonna go, "No, no way." But if you've got an X amount per month, then you're just gonna take the resource from that.
Yeah,
you don't really add up that cost, even though it ends up being far more expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
The classic programmer thing is, yeah, you underestimate me. Oh, it's only taken me a couple of hours to knock out a video player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, John worked with me on it. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Okay, and a final question about your approach to coding, in terms of coding.
Oh yeah. Okay, so I've all. Traditionally, right, and this is for my sins, so I've been the person that, say someone says, okay, we need a video player, it needs to be able to play these different things. I go, okay, I read the spec or whatever, I talk to the designer, find out what we need, and I just dive headfirst in there and start programming. It's just like, just, there's non-stop. And it kind of works, but I've tried to change it my way now. It's like, obviously, depending on what you're actually doing, but you know, take a step back, read the specs, and just break it down into its subcomponents. Work out, what steps it's going to be. Talk to anyone that's actually going to be dealing with it, actually going to be interacting with the systems that you're writing as well. You know, talk to them to find out what they need from it and whatever. So, and before you even touch the keyboard to actually start working on these things. Just get it down on paper. You've got to, even for the smaller systems, just spend half an hour. You're going to save much more than half an hour in the long run just by taking a step back and just thinking about it, designing it, putting it down on paper, mm-hmm. whatever. It's better in the long run. You know, you're going to create a better product in the long run. You know, it's from the smallest thing to the biggest thing. Just step back and,
yep.
and design.
Cool. Okay, anyone have a quick question or thought? Yep.
Regarding students and teams, say you still got a majority of experienced people, say 75 to 25.
Yep.
What strategies would you invoke for the less experienced people to gain to that level?
Ask questions, yeah. We're a pretty good bunch, I like to think in games, where, you know, we're pretty open, we're friendly, you know, we're willing to help anyone, you know, and just ask questions. If you're unsure about anything, obviously Google. is the first step. But you know, if you're spending more than, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour trying to work something out, and you're absolutely stuck, ask questions. It doesn't have to be your lead. It just has to be someone else on the team. If they don't know the answers, just go up the chain. Just ask questions. You know, you'll get there eventually.
Cool. And so we have. Is it a quick one?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yep.
How do you relate the take a step back and think about it to fail often and fail fast?
See, that's
like there's a balance there between doing the whole waterfall design up front, etc., and then implement it as compared to iterate quickly. Mistakes and your,
well, everything's got iteration. Yeah, I will say, yeah, it's just one big balancing act, isn't it? Yeah, you know, I still think, you know, even with iteration, which everything needs, you will save time over the long run.
So
just because you've got a better design system, so it's more expandable and flexible.
So step back, think about it, but don't necessarily have to answer all the questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.